Nice nap. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Let's chant verse 15. That's where we are, I think. Let's repeat after me. Swastana samstito dipaha.
Swastana samstito dipaha.
Sarvato bhasayet yata.
Sarvato bhasayet yata.
Stirastayi tata sakshi.
Stirastayi tata sakshi.
Bahiranta prakashayet.
Bahiranta prakashayet.
Swastana samstitaha deepaha sarvataha bhasayet yata. Stira stayi tata sakshi bahihi antaha prakashayet. So again, going back to in one verse now, the drishtanta and the darshtanta. It says, swastana samstitaha deepaha. Deepaha is the lamp, which is stitaha, which is remaining. Samstitaha is which is remaining in its own place. Right. So I have the lamp, and it just remains there, steadily there in its own place. And that lamp, sarvataha basayet yata. Yata means just as. So just as a lamp, remaining in its own place, illumines all of the surrounding area. A lamp there, the lamp is lit, everything that's in its vicinity becomes illumined, itself not moving or doing anything at all. So just as how the lamp, staying in its same place, illumines everything in the surrounding area, stirastayi tata sakshi tata. In the same way, the sakshi, the witness, stirastayi, remaining. Stayi means remaining, stira, steady, without any motion or any movement. That bahihi anta prakashiyate. That sakshi illumines everything. Prakashiyate means shines, illumines everything. Bahihi anta. Illumines that which is external and that which is internal. Bahihi means outside, and then illumines that which is inside also. So then the question is, what is inside and outside? From the standpoint of the sakshi, what would be antar? It's illumining something inside, and it's illumining something outside. So what is this inside and outside in relationship to? So he says, these two verses go together. So let's do it again. Repeat after me. bahirantar vibhagoyam deha peksho na sakshini
deha peksho na sakshini
vishaya bahya dehasta
vishaya bahya dehasta.
It's actually Vishaya bahya dehastaha.
Vishaya bahya dehastaha.
Dehasya antara. Dehasyantar ahankritihi.
Dehasyantar ahankritihi.
Bahihi. Antaha. Vibhagaha. Ayam. Deha. Apekshaha nasakshini vishayaha bahya dehastaha dehasya antar ahankritihi. So just to clarify, he says this division, antar inner, bahir out external, internal external. Bahir antar, so bahi is external, antar is internal. This division, vibhaga, ayam vibhagaha, this separation, this division between internal and external, is deha apekshaha, is only in reference to the deha, the body. So, na sakshinaha, it's not in reference to the sakshi, to the witness. So if I say, okay, the witness illumines everything inside and outside. So inside and outside of what? Inside and outside of the body. Okay, so what is inside the body and what is outside the body? Because not the sakshi, only regarding apeksha means in reference to or keeping into consideration the deha, the physical body. Then he says, vishayaha bahya deshastaha. The vishayas are the anything that I can objectify, the objects of perception. So the vishayas you take here is the physical sense objects that are outside of the body. So he says, the vishayas, the sense objects, are bahya desha staha. They are abiding bahya desha in the external space. So desha means place. So the all of these vishayas that we perceive through our sense organs, all of those are considered to be external. But then he says, dehasta antar ahankriti, and the ahankara, the I notion itself, the ahankara, is internal. So, to start with, dehasya antar, inside of the body, there is the ahankara. Okay, we'll do the next verse in a minute. Understanding this division, even though it seems to me it's so obvious, I have to think of what to say about that. but the thing is that the sakshi or Brahman, the self, yourself, you know, illumines any and everything that is objectifiable. And we usually only think of that which is objectifiable as objectifiable through our sense organs or what it's almost as though I take myself in the sense of this body, mind, sense organs, karya, karana, sangata, this collection here, all of these upadis together. I take myself, in a sense, to be the sakshi, to be the witness, to be the knower, to be the seer, the doer. All of that is always the the Atma, the, I would say my myself, if I say myself, the Atma, I'm really talking about me, this body, mind, sense organs, person. And so in that sense, I can take, without any knowledge, I take myself, okay, we're calling me the Sakshi now. You know, it's like saying, I'm saying I'm the knower, I'm the Sakshi, I'm the witness of everything. How do I witness everything? Well, you know, through my sense perception, everything is known to me. Whatever vrittis are there, those things are all known to me. But I don't really bring the viveka between the knower and the known all the way back to what ultimately cannot be known. That's what we don't do. We assume that, just assuming that this body, mind, sense organs is the knower, the conscious being, the doer, the karta, this is all ahankara, assuming that I am this, I don't look any further. Because actually, in terms of a sakshi, or the knower, or the witness, it's not only everything external to this body that is known. You know, this body is also known. My sense organs are known. I'm aware of my sense organs. I know if they work or they don't work. I know how to use them. My mind uses my sense organs in order to perceive. So the body is perceived. It's also an object as much as the room is. What is the difference? And, oh, that's interesting. It's a little animal. Okay. It went behind the picture. Yeah. Either a little big mouse, or it was a little lizard, a big lizard. Mm-hmm. So this type of viveka, when we talk about it, it's so obvious, you know, but it's not something that comes up in any type of real way. But when you think about it, you know, this body, this world, external to the physical body is bahihi. It's external. It's external to the body. And I know about it. I know about all of this. I'm aware of it. I have seen, you know, a knower known relationship with all of this. And so I take these to be the vishayas. These are the objects which I'm aware of through my sense perception. But somehow it doesn't dawn on me that this physical body I'm aware of only, really, through my sense perception. The same sense perception that allows me to see all of this, my sense organs, allow me to experience this. Those same five sense organs allow me to have the experience of the body. And that makes this an object. It makes this a vishya as much as everything else in the room is a vishya, you know. But that's because this... All right, it's a vishaya, it's an object, you know, but it's also an upadhi. It's an object, but at the same time, it enjoys my consciousness. So I take this body to be me because I'm a conscious being, and this body also is a conscious being. It's not that I'm a conscious being, and this body over here is also a conscious being. It's the conscious being that I am is totally identified with this physical body. And that seems to trump or to take strength over the fact that this body, which enjoys consciousness, we can say, is also an object of sense perception. Now there's another thing in that, is that in terms of enjoying consciousness, I can say that in the same way that this world that I'm perceiving enjoys consciousness and how it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. So not in any way away from awareness, consciousness, because every single experience I have through my sense perception is known. And so I can say this enjoys consciousness, right? In its knownness. Now, this body also enjoys consciousness in its knownness. So in that way, right, this body is known. So in that sense, what is the difference between the knownness of this body and the knownness of the flowers? And there's actually no difference at all. You know? But this has something additional. It has something additional. So even though this is known as much as this is known, and the knownness is not two, it's not a different kind of knownness. This is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. Still, my subtle body can say, doesn't reach out over into the flowers. Right? And so it's not, doesn't feel attached to me. The knownness is, the objectification is identical. The knownness is identical. But my mind doesn't take it that this as far as it needs to. Because if I say, well, this is known and this body is known, I say, yeah, but I am this body. It's known, all right, but I am this body. I say, why do you say you're this body? Well, because I'm a conscious being and this body enjoys my consciousness. And then you ask, well, how does this body enjoy your consciousness? What do you actually mean? Well, the me that I am, you know, the me that I am, fills this body. We could say if I get into Vedanta, it fills this body because you have a sense of touch. But just from the standpoint of Vijnanam, the self, the me, my I, fills this body so that I can have what's called an anyonya adhyasa with it. My conscious being, right, fills this body, so then the consciousness and the body become as though one and the same. So when that's my experience, then of course whatever the qualities that I perceive in this body are my qualities. And this body, which is perceived by me, is the conscious being. So logically, when we start to analyze it, it just keeps shredding, it keeps falling apart, because it makes no sense at all. It even becomes less. It makes less and less and less sense when we actually go into your own experience of yourself as a conscious being. So what is the experience? What other language can we use when we talk about me as a conscious being? How do I experience that? Right? I think it we experience it in terms of the innermost knownness, because I can say, like, all of this is known and I have a subject-object relationship with it, so then I become the one because of whom this is known, this world. If I do some more viveka, I can say, this body is also known. Same knownness. This body is also known. I have a subject-object relationship with this body, right? And so this body becomes known and because of me, because I am the knower ultimately. The me, even now, it just as for an Agnani, I am ultimately the one who knows. And so if I can say I have a subject-object relationship with this body, then this body becomes known, and I surmise that there is a knower because of whom this body is known. Now we've got this world is known, this body is known, but then as we go a little farther, I can say, well, really, this body is known only because of my sense organs. So my sense organs, they are the instrument because of which this world and this body is known. Right? Without my sense organs, then this world and this body couldn't be known. And so now I've gone inward a little bit, realizing that really the knower is the sense organs, because they are the ones responsible for this experience of knownness in reference to the body and everything else. But then as we go inward a little bit, we have to say, well, you know, the sense organs also are known, just like this is known, this world is known, this body is known. Then I say, yeah, and your sense organs are also known. This very sense organs, which are the instruments for knowing this body and this world, these sense organs, they're also known. So we're still at the known, we're still at known, right? And now that we're still at known, I can surmise or postulate that I am the one because of whom these things are known, And then I label that one as me, the knower. Okay? And so I can go even further to try to get to really who I am, the knower. And I can go, well, actually the sense organs, they are known, like the body is known, like this world is known. Your sense organs are known because of your mind. Your mind uses the sense organs. If your mind isn't using the sense organs, then they're not even functioning. So your mind is innermost to the sense organs. The sense organs are known because of your mind. So I, my mind, am the knower, because of which all of these things are known. So now I still have one known here. But what's included in this knownness is increasing, right? Because first what's included in the knownness is only this world that I perceive. All of this is known. Then we realize, well, okay, the body also is known by the same sense organs. Yeah, well, okay, the sense organs, they are also known. Remember, there is no difference in this known. There's difference in the objects that are known, not in the knownness at all, you know. Like even say if I stay out here in this world, I can say, you know, these trees are known, the windows are known, you are known, the flowers are known, all of these things are known. The invariable there is their knownness, right? Now, so the invariable, even through my sense perception, landing on all of these things, the invariable is the knownness. What is changing, what is the variable, are all of the different objects that are known. So one object comes, it's known. Another object comes, it's known, it's known, it's known, it's known. Nothing's happening to the knownness. The objects are changing. Now as we move inside, more innermost to this body, we realize, okay, the body is known. Okay, the sense organs are known. You know, okay, the sense organs are known because of the mind. Then you have to say, the mind also is known, right? The mind also, which is responsible for the sense organs being known, the sense organs that are responsible for the body being known, the mind itself is known. And now I get into kind of a odd situation. Because the mind, what do you mean by the mind? Well, I mean every vritti, every thought modification that you have. It could be the citta, the memories. It could be the manas. These are categories of thought. It could be the manas, the fluctuating mind, and all of the negative emotions as they come up. They are known, right? It can be, of course, the buddhi, which is really the type of thoughts that have clarity, that have knowledge. Those thoughts as they arrive, those are also known. Imaginal thoughts are known. The ahankara itself, the I notion, it is also known. Okay? And so now we try to think of, well, is there anything else known? Well, yeah, all of your relationships are known. You know, all of the qualities that you may have is known. All of the things that you've learned that you know, those are known. All of the things that you don't know, you also know that. If I ask you, you know, do you know Chinese? You probably would say, no, I don't. No, that would be nice. You should learn Mandarin. You should all learn. But no, I don't know. I don't know. So you actually, what you know and what you don't know, your knowledge and your ignorance, that is also known. And so now we are kind of, you could say, well, space is known. Yes, space is known. Is time known? Yes, time is known. You know, what else has to be known? So everything in the creation, every experience I have, it breaks down to every single vritti is known. And so that means then I am the knower. I am the knower because of which all of these things are known. Okay. Now who is left? Because everything that I've taken to be me is known. The knownness remains the same. It's just the vishyas, whatever is the object of the vritti, you know, that's going on changing. But the knownness remains exactly the same. So now we have to get to the me, the one because of whom all of these things are known. And now the question is, that one that we call the sakshi, because I can't go any farther, I don't have any more upadis to identify with as the knower. Right? They've all been objectified. They're all known. So now we're left with the sakshi. And we can say, what is the sakshi? Well, that's That's you. That's the one because of whom all of these things are known. And then we say, well, is the Sakshi known? Is the Sakshi known? Remember, we can't go any farther because we've already objectified time and space and all of the upadis and all of the sense organs and the mind and the body and the world. All of those are objectified, and we see all of them clearly. They are known, they are known, they are known, they are known. And now you're left with what we will call the knower or call the Sakshi. But the question is, or what we can call me. But if we just call it me, the one because of whom all of these things are known. Then the question is, what is, because I can't go anywhere else. I can't go beyond, because there's nothing beyond it, you know. There's no other level I can go to. That's why the self is called the Pratyagatma, the innermost self. Because all of these, the body and the sense organs and the mind, etc., they all act as upadis for the ahankara. You know, but as I analyze it, I recognize they're upadis, that they are actually things that are objectified and have a subject-object relationship with it. But now I'm left with me, with the Sakshi, that we call the Sakshi. We're only making that up, actually. We're calling it the Sakshi, the witness, because I recognize that this, as I've gone as far as I can, that my mind itself is known. It is known. All of my thoughts are known. So I kind of need a knower, you know, because these things are known. It's all a language thing. I need a knower because these things are all known. My mind, my thoughts, they're all known. And so then let's call me the Sakshi, which is kind of a nice way of calling me the knower. But Sakshi really means the witness. Now the question is, what upadi or what does the Sakshi, what is the Sakshi doing to illumine all of these things? That's one question, you know. How is it that this Sakshi is a knower, like knower known, seer seen? And that's problematic. That's problematic because your sense organs and mind have already been objectified and fallen into the realm of the known. Right? And so now your Sakshi, the Sakshi, you know, doesn't have any sense organs or mind to utilize to objectify anything because the sense organs and mind themselves are known. They've already been objectified. And so you had mistakenly taken them to be you. But now you realize, well, they can't be me because they themselves are known. Right? And so I'm the knower. I'm not the known. So now we're on a search, having objectified everything about myself and the world. And now I'm in search of me, the knower. But when we search for me, the knower, what happens is that I can't find the knower. All I can say is that this one that we're calling the Sakshi is itself known. I am known. I am not unknown. I am known. And so, say the bottom line, the Pratyagatma, the innermost self, is itself known. It is known. Because you're not going to say, no, I'm not known. Well, I would say, do you have a self? Are you a conscious being? Of course, I'm a conscious being. How do you know you're a conscious being? Because now we've objectified all of these things. These are known, these are known, these are known, these are known. How do you know you're a conscious being? Well, because I'm a conscious being. I'm a conscious being. I know that I'm a conscious being. Nobody has to prove that to me. Are you the conscious being known? Yeah, I am known. How are you known? Who knows you? Because all the way up to what we call the Sakshi, I have an answer for that. I can say, I am the knower. Or I can say this body is and world is known because I have sense organs. The sense organs are known because of the mind. The mind is known because of me. The vrittis are known because of me. And then how are you known or aren't you known? I am known, of course. I'm the knower. I am known. The knower is known. You have to say, well, by knower, does that mean that you, the one who is known, are performing some type of an act of knowing? You know, like for instance, if I have sense organs and my mind is using my sense organs, I can direct them. I can direct this seer-seeing relationship, this hearer-heard relationship. You know, I can pull my mind back. I can use my imagination. All of these types of things I can do with the upadis, you know. But now, what am I doing from the standpoint of me, the self, because of which all of these things are known? Because I can't go behind the self to have another sakshi illumining the self. I can't have a self illumining the self. Right. So how is it that I am known? Because it's very interesting. This is known, this is known, and there's no, you have to see that there's an invariable here. The invariable experience. The invariable experience is in our language, we say, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Every experience I have is known. Every vishaya, everything that I can objectify, it is known. So the is-knownness is the invariable. It never changes. Everything comes into and out of is-knownness. So now say, because I've done the seer-seeing differentiation between me and everything that is known, what if we, all of us together, you know, perform this little magical feat, imaginal feat, by recognizing together that everything that is known, right, is, we can differentiate from the nature of me, the knower, right? If it is known, I have a subject-object relationship with us, and that's true for all of us. So say all of us have, in exactly the same way, actually, all of us have a subject-object relationship with this world that we perceive through our sense organs, right? So we can all together kind of put in the middle of the room all sense objects. Those are all differentiated from me. We can also together put into the room, as in a basket, though, as in a great big basket of that includes all the things that I can differentiate from me. We can put in the sense organ. We can put in the body, of course, all the sense objects and the body, because the body is also known. So it's objectified. Subject, object, it's in that objectification, in that viveka, it is now differentiated from me. So all of us will also throw our bodies into the basket in the middle of the room. Okay? And even though all our bodies, of course, they're different, my body's different from your body, but then these bodies are not you and they're not me because they've been made into vishyas, they've been objectified. So all of the bodies go into the room. Because all the sense organs, all of our sense organs are, of course, different, but they're also vishayas. They're also things that I have a subject-object relationship with, and because of that, there's a viveka between the knower and the known. The sense organs, even though they function as a knower, they themselves are also known. That's why our sense organs get reduced to instruments, just simple instruments that I use. But they are not me, because even though they themselves are known, they're responsible for making other things known, but they themselves are known. And so these sense organs also, we'll just toss those into the basket. And even though our sense organs are all different from each other, neither, they're not mine, they're not me, and they're not you. So they go into the basket. And then we say, well, all right, those are all in the basket, and so now we're left with the mind. We say, well, you know, the mind also, all of the vrittis, even the ahankara, all of those are also known, right? And so those also have to go into the basket. So now the mind, with all of its vrittis, goes into the basket. We say, well, that's a lot of things in the basket there. And we can also say, you know, we also have to put space in the basket, because space is known, space is objectified, so we'll throw space in the basket also, you know. Of course, time is known also, so time has to go into the basket. And so now, what else can we... Well, we can put, you know, all our collection of knowledge into the basket, because those are all things. Not all of our knowledges, all the things that we've learned, those also are known. They all go into the basket. What about all your ajnanam, all the things you don't know? You're very aware if you know something or you don't know. So all the ajnanam also goes into the basket. And now here we are. Here I am. Now there's nothing else. Because we've gotten rid of time and space objectified. We've gotten rid of all of the upadis. We've gotten rid of all of the different means of knowledge. We've even got rid of the mind and the buddhi. The mind, the buddhi, the ahankara, everything is in the basket. And now what is left is me. But then I am here. I am the sakshi. But then we ask, the sakshi of what? The sakshi of what? What is there to know? And what are the instruments of knowledge for me? Because I can't know, I can't say now, I am the sakshi, the witness, because of my sense organs. Because I'm not the sense organs. I illumine the sense organs. So I'm not a sakshi or a witness or knower because I have these instruments called sense organs which are doing these jobs for me. That is true. That's with the sense organs. Because of the sense organs, I get a variety of vrittis. But I'm neither the sense organs nor the vrittis. And so, no, those can't make me a sakshi or a knower because they all already have been reduced to knownness. Right? They are objectified. And I said, yeah, well, with the mind that it can the sakshi, no, we've already put the mind in the basket. You know, the mind also can't be a witness. It itself ultimately is an object of my knowledge. It can function. It does a tremendous function for me within duality, but not from the standpoint of me. And so now what we all have to do is, okay, let's just let everything be there in the basket, and let's see who is left then. What is my nature? And how is it that I am a knower? And do I need to be a knower? Do I need to be a knower? Because from my own standpoint, I don't have any sense organs, or mind, or body, or universe even. Right? Those are all objectified. And yet I still am. I still am. And I am known. How am I known? Not through the sense organs, not through the mind, because those have been objectified from my own swarupa, from my own nature. How is it that I am known? Well, actually, if we stick with the same language, it's because I am the innermost knownness. I am the knownness itself. Which is saying, I am the consciousness itself. Consciousness, in reference to the world, we translate as, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. It's the consciousness, the me-ness is the invariable. It is known, it is known, it is known. The body is known, the body is known, the body is known. The sense organs are known, the sense organs are known. The mind is known, the vrittis are known. The space is known, the time is known. I am known. I am known. And so what we can say once we start to understand this, well, actually, the word knower or sakshi is misleading. Because the word knower or sakshi makes you think that you are doing some sort of activity to become a knower of the known, as though there's a knower-known duality, because of which I know things. But actually, there is no knower-known duality. There is one knownness, that is me, that is conscious being, the sat-chit. And of course, sat-chit, consciousness, me, is known, not as an object of knowledge, but it is the knownness itself, as consciousness. So I am the knownness because of which, or I can say I am the consciousness, because of which all of these things are known. That's why we use this term, bhati, I shine, or bhami, I shine, as consciousness, and everything shines after me. And so what would that be look like in terms of our experience is that I am known as consciousness, And every vritti that I have is anubhati. It shines after this consciousness. So the innermost self is known because it is consciousness, not because there's a knower, but because it is self-evident. That's what we mean by self-evident, self-shining. I simply shine as consciousness, and everything shines after me. And so then when we using the language, this becomes really amazing, because I can say, like, okay, the wall is known, all of you are known. And for, yeah, you have to do it yourself. So this wall is known, and then all of you that I'm seeing are known. This body is known. My sense organs are known. My mind is known. The ahankara itself is known. My relationships are known. Space is known, yes. You know, these are all things. My relationships are known. My knowledges are known. My ignorance is known. I am known. That's the truth of it. The knownness is the adhishtana. I am the knownness. So another way, because people, how can I be the knownness? We don't talk like that. So, okay, all of this is in my consciousness. All of this I'm aware of. 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 I get everything, rid of everything that I'm aware of, and what is left? Awareness. Awareness. Does somebody have to be aware of awareness? Does some consciousness have to be aware of consciousness? Do you have to bring in a second consciousness to illumine consciousness? So that the second consciousness is the knower of consciousness then. That then you need a knower of that consciousness to be aware of this consciousness, to be aware of this consciousness. That's not our experience at all. Our experience is that everything does in fact enjoy knownness without any exception. Everything. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Everything enjoys without an I am not. Everything enjoys existence. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. The body is, the sense organs are, the mind is. Everything enjoys existence. That's such it. Conscious being. What is the word for conscious being when I get to the pratyagatma, that innermost self? The word that we use for conscious being is me. I am that conscious being. And am I a knower? No, not really. I'm not a knower at all, because I don't have sense organs or mind to be a knower within duality, to have a subject-object relationship. I am self-evident conscious being. Known, so the known because of being consciousness, and then everything shines after me. Is it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. So it's not that there is a knower, it's just that I can differentiate things that are known from myself until I get to myself. Once I get to myself, then what I realize is all of this knownness that I've been differentiating from me, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, stops at known. Stops at consciousness itself. The conscious being. It stops at the conscious being itself. Am I the conscious being, or am I the object of consciousness? So no, I'm the conscious being. You're not going to say, you know, I'm the thing that I've thrown in the basket. I'm the one who's left. But the one who's left isn't doing anything. All the things that do things exist within time and space and are part of the basket. They're filling the basket. But now we're left with another understanding is that everything, what we call an upadhi, that I had taken to be me, right, we've thrown in the basket, all of us. We've even thrown time and space in the basket. And I'm now just left with myself, and you're all left with yourself. We're all left with this innermost me, which is self-evident conscious being, me. In our language, that is me. That's the I. That's who I am. Because I can't go any farther than that. But then the question is, you know, then all of these things, inner, all of the objectified things interior to the body and exterior to the body, all of those have become vishayas. Even time and space, vishyas, they're all objects. So all of those things that are in the are in the basket, and here I am, and here you are. So say, here I am, here you are, here you are, here you are. But now I'm met right back into time and space, because you're there, and you're there, and you're there. And actually, every single thing that differentiates you from me has been thrown in the basket. It is not me. And so then, what does differentiate me from you or from any being? Because it doesn't matter what the being, it could be an animal, it could be a mosquito, it could be another human being, it could be Ishwara. If it's objectifiable, it's gone in the basket. It's been differentiated from me. And so what makes me different from you? Or what makes me, what gives me a limitation? This body is subject to birth and death, but it's gone in the basket. Because of viveka, because I have a subject-object relationship with it. And so there is no, the physical death is not going to be my death, because the physical death belongs to the body, which has already been put in the basket. What about all of your moods and sufferings and sorrows? And joys and all of that also. They're also in the basket, right? Because those are definitely objectified. So what makes me different than you? I can say even in terms of sense organs, our sense organs are all different. Yeah, they are. But they're all in the basket. You know? No difference there. The mind, our thoughts, our vrittis, our, the ahankara, all objectified in the basket. Time and space, objectified in the basket. So at the bottom line, when I'm left just with myself, and you're left just with yourself, me, your me experience, because as you're kind of doing this viveka, you don't lose, as you throw all these things in the basket, you don't lose the me, your own self experience that you take to be you, your innermost self, we can say. This is where it stops here, at me, you know. And so this me, it does not get thrown in the basket. The sense of me, of my own very personal self. I can't throw that in the basket because I can't objectify it. That is a word for the subject, me. And so now all of us are left with the subject, me. Right? But what makes me different, my me, different from your me? You have to go to an upadhi, something that you've already thrown in the basket. So what that means is that this very personal me that is me, to me, as an agnani, even as an agnani or agnani, it doesn't make any difference. This very personal me is not something that is subject to time or space or objectification, because those are all already objectified. This me, I can't objectify. I can't say, okay, let's objectify me to see what I really look like or something. You can't do it. You can only be yourself. And so here I am left. Here you are all left, just as this very intimate, personal self that you are and always have been. The only thing that we have to realize about that is that, well, you know, how can there be two of us? How can there be two me's? What would allow for there to be two of us? Well, once we have two of us, then we have to be within time and space. Because if we've gotten rid of time and space, then there's no room for two of us, right? Because there's no space there. And we have gotten rid of time and space. And so that's not going to be able to make two of us. Like I could say, well, I'm this just conscious me over here, and you're the conscious me over here, and you're the conscious me over here. But we've already thrown space into the basket because it's objectified. Yeah. And so now here's a problem. But I am me. I am me. I am not you. I am me. You are you. I am me. I can't be you. Because I don't want to be some sort of universal self. I don't want to share myself. You know? I don't want you to be me. It's all right for you to be you and me to be me, so that we all have our own me's. And then I can just be me. And I realize that my me, the me that I am, you know, has been differentiated from all of these upadis and from the world. But the me that I am is the me that I am. And it's the me that I'm comfortable. I know this me. And now I'm realizing that I'm not objectifiable. And so I'm not subject to time and I'm not subject to space. And this me that I am is completely free, actually. It's not subject to death. This very personal me is free. Nothing can touch me at all because all of those things are objectified. They're all subject to change. They all exist within time and space. And so I am free. Nothing's going to happen to me, even as all of the things in time and space, they keep going on, and they're born and they die, and there's good things that happen and bad things that happen, but not to me, because I am free even of time and space and anything that's objectified. So I am actually purely asangaha. Asangaha means nothing can touch me in any way. The closest thing we have to that is space. Space in the world is a sangha. It's more subtle. Everything goes on within it, but the space is never touched at all. And I have objectified even space, you know. And so that's beautiful. I am free then. But we're just missing something. We're missing something. And that is the recognition that there, from the standpoint of the self, having objectified everything else, including time and space, there is not room for two of us. Then you can say, oh, you mean we have to share? Do we really have to share? Do I have to share myself? No. You're not going to share yourself. You can't share yourself. Because that would be two. Right? So there's no sharing. Then what? Well, it means that there's only one of us. Well, is that one of us, you or me? Is this one? Is this one self? You say there's only one of us. Who is it going to be? Is it you or me? Yeah. And we have to say, well, no, it's not you or me. I'm the one self of all of us. What do you mean you're the one self of all of us? Why don't I be the one self of all of us? Because our language gets tricky. You have to look at it like this. There is only one self, and that one self is me. And so the me experience, when I say I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, those words are referring to the one self, which is the one self in all beings. It's the one me. This very personal me is the only me that there is, and all beings have that me, that very personal me that is me, as their adhishtana. There is only one self. And so this one very intimate self that I know so well as me is me. It is absolutely true. But the self experience, this very intimate experience of me, is really the one non-dual intimate experience, me, which is the very self of Ishvara. The most dear, that which is the most dear, this me that is the most dear, you know, and I'm a little attached to, you know, and I'm possessive of, you know, and don't really want to share, you know, because I don't want to get diluted, you know. I don't want to have to split myself up in all of these ways. But there's no splitting up because time and space itself has been thrown in the basket. There's no splitting up. There just is one self. And one me experience. Why this is important? Because we believe, for very obvious reasons, I think, that, okay, there's an Atma. There's this Atma, which is Brahman, this innermost self, which is actually infinite and the one self of and all beings. But that's different than me, this me experience. And then so they say, well, this me experience, what really makes me unique, is probably because of this body, mind, sense organs, or the transmigrating sukshma sharira, is means that from the standpoint, you know, the subtle body and taking these bodies, that this me experience that is unique to me, everyone has their own, because everybody has their own subtle body and they all have their own mind and their own physical body. And that's what gives this intimate me experience. Say, no, no. That intimate me experience is not something you can objectify. It is something which you are. There's no subject-object relationship between me and me. Right? So this intimate me experience that I'm attached to as being my own self, the me experience belongs to the self, not to an upadhi. The me experience, my me experience, that is me, belongs only to me, the one conscious being. It is the language that we use for the nature of the self that I am, but and which is not shared, but which is not two. It's not shared, but it's not two. And so this me that makes me, that is me, is the adhishtana of the whole creation. It is the adhishtana, the conscious being. The very personal me is the conscious being of Ishvara, which is so nice when you start to think about it. Ishvara is so personal. That which is the most dear to me, which was my own being, is the very being of Ishvara. But also, it's the very being of all beings. It's the very being of everything in this creation. If the things in this creation, the things that have a sukshma sharira, like for instance plants and animals and mosquitoes and fish and human beings and devatas, they have subtle bodies, right? Then the me that those subtle bodies enjoy from the standpoint of the upadhi will reflect consciousness, and they have different, the upadhis have different capacities and all of that, you know? But the me is still one and the same. And then what about all of the, like the rocks and the boards and the wood and the inert items? Well, all of those have the same satchit, but from their own conscious being, but from their own standpoint, they don't reflect consciousness because they don't have a sukshma sharira. They don't have a mind. But that doesn't mean that they're not known, that they don't exist, that they're not known. They have the same adhishtana. So it's a very simple thing, and this is something we all know, but there's subtle things that are missed in this. And I think the thing that is the most missed, or that was the most missed for me, is the fact that Ishvara, or the self of all beings, or your very being, and the being of everybody, you know, is the me that you've always taken yourself to be. It's not another me. The me that is most dear. It is that me that the Upanishads are revealing, the me that I've always known myself to be, but only with the Samanya Jnanam. Only with this general understanding of I, me, this conscious being, you know. It's never been unfolded so that you realize that, wow, you, the conscious being that you are, this very intimate me, is who the Upanishads are talking about and saying that this me that you are is the very me of Ishvara. There's not another me. This very personal me is Ishvara. So what does that mean also? These are just the little subtle things that you keep unfolding endlessly. The beauty of it keeps endlessly unfolding. That when we say, I am Ishvara, even though this upadhi is part of Ishvara, right? This upadhi is part. If I say Ishvara is the whole Maya upadhi, but this infinite Maya upadhi has me, this me, as itself. So that means that this Maya upadhi is not away from me. It's not somebody else. It's not some God in heaven, you know, who's looking down. You know, some Ishvara, some God in heaven looking down who has a different me. No, this is me. This is myself. This manifest creation is my manifest creation. This body, these jiva upadhi, the jiva upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, they're all part of this manifest creation. But this manifest creation is mine, right? It's not somebody else's. And so that's why, as you start contemplating on this, really realizing the what this means, there's some things that are so beautiful about it. Like one of them, and there's many, many things, but one of the things is, this is your infinite mind. The Ishvara, this my infinite Maya Upadhi, is your infinite mind. This mind, the Jiva Upadhi, is your limited, Alpajnaha. It has limited knowledge. Your infinite mind, Ishvara, has Sarvajnaha, infinite knowledge. Sarva Shakti Mattvam, infinite capacity. You have Alpa Shakti Mattvam, limited capacity. Right? But this is me and this is me. It's not like there's two me's. And so then I can have a very wonderful relationship with Ishvara, which is the manifestation of your being, of you. It's not Ishvara is not other than you. It's just the infinite manifestation of you. And so sometimes you can say things, well, okay, what would Ishvara do in this situation? It's like saying, okay, what the one who has that part, that myself, with the Ishvara Upadhi, how is Bhagavan handling this situation? Because infinite mind, infinite knowledge, you know, having to balance so many things, you know, for the good of the whole. Just like with your body, you balance so many things for the good of the whole. You have to take care of the whole body, you know. You don't even like to have a hangnail. If you have a hangnail, you have to go to it and fix that up because it's causing pain. You take care of the whole body. If the whole thing is yours, you know? And so the whole creation is yours. The whole thing has to hang together properly, you know. It has to be cared for. There's a lot of different situations because the jivas have, every jiva has a certain amount of free will. There's dharma and adharma. So in Kali Yuga, big messes can be created. Your infinite mind has to handle all of that, you know, for the good of the whole. That's a huge task. But you can kind of enjoy watching how the infinite mind, your infinite self, handles all of this for the good of the whole, you know. It's a beautiful understanding because it is all really only me. There's only one self. But then I say, as we contemplate on these things and you start to really understand these things, what ideally, as a jnani, what you want is with a removal, which takes time, the removal of the different layers of a jnanam, you know, self-ignorance. In terms of Ishvara, in terms of your relationship with the whole, you want this upadhi to just be one with the infinite mind, with your infinite mind. There's a certain shraddha, there's a trust there, you know, that Bhagavan knows what is best. It's like saying your infinite mind, you know, has a bigger plan than you do. Because right? It has total knowledge. It's nothing other than your own expression. And so let my heart really, when we say let my heart be as big as Ishvara's, it means, you know, everything, it's a recognition that all of this is myself, all of this is Ishvara. How to be with all of these things, you know, in a way that is respectful of the whole. You know, that in a way that, I would say like this, in a way that is not ignorance-based. In a way that is true to my knowledge, you know. How to be with others, how to be with the world, how to be with Bhagavan, how to be with the Ishta Devatas, you know, how to be with all beings, how to be with all experiences. We want to be with all of our experiences in a way that is natural to me without when the ajnanam is gone, in a way that is natural to me. And the way that is natural to me is the way that is natural to Ishvara, you would say. So the difference between the Jiva Upadhi and the Ishvara Upadhi, in one sense, there's no difference at all. Because once the ajnanam is gone, once self-ignorance is gone, the way you do what is there, you do what is there to be done. You know, the Jiva Srishti, the jiva's creations, its projections and all that are all born of ajnanam, are not meaningful anymore. Because you are the ananda swarupa, and this whole creation is not apart from you. And so this body, mind, sense organs is just one of the infinite manifestations of Ishwara, and it is taken care of by the whole. And so therefore you have a tremendous freedom to just do what's before you to the best of your ability. As Swamiji said that, I usually probably say this almost in every class, or 5 out of 10 classes. And Swamiji, said, I do what's in front of me to the best of my ability. And then he goes, and that's it. That's it. Here and now, is part and part, the upadis is part and part parcel of yourself. Yourself in terms of this infinite manifestation of Ishwara. And recognizing that all of this is you. There are two selves here. And so I know you from the standpoint of the self completely, because there's only one of us. So you don't have partial knowledge of the non-dual self. It's just you think that there's two of us, and there aren't. There's only one of us. And so I know you so intimately. And then all of our minds and our unconscious and our sense organs, all of these are part of Ishwara's blueprint. We're all human beings, and so we have all of these different upadis that function in primarily the same way. And so to understand, to have some depth of Ishwara's order in terms of like psychology and dharma and adharma, because there's free will, also helps so much to kind of handle the things that we've accrued during the beginningless years of ajnanam. All of these things sort themselves out, but in a very beautiful way. And then it becomes easier when you realize that at the core of everything in the creation is you, not somebody else. Not you as the mind or the body or the sense organs, but who you actually are. You are the adhishtana of the whole creation. So this becomes something, worth meditating on, and also makes sense when we think of Upayanishta and Upayanishta. The Upayanishta is really just our commitment to transform all of the pains we've picked up along the way. As Ajnanis, all of the pains that we've picked up along the way, the unconscious, which is full of hurts, all of these type of things, we're now just kind of cleaning house, transforming in a kind way. So because we don't have to have these problems anymore, but they hang on for a while. That's why Swamiji said, I did all of my work. I worked hard for this knowledge. He did. He worked hard to get jnanam, the Upayanishta. He worked really hard. He had a lot of obstacles in the way. He had a really hard upbringing when he was a child. He lost his father when he was 8, and so many things not understood. And he had a lot of issues that he worked through, but for the sake of the upadhi. And that's exactly what we're doing, that we have all of these things that we know how to do in order to take these two, wings seriously, so that we can just to allow this knowledge to manifest in us completely. And that's what we're doing. The self doesn't care. Yourself is fine. But why shouldn't this upadhi be an expression of your knowledge and get back to its original condition, basically? Okay.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurupyo.